I'm talking to Dee Dee Feldman, who is a former senator, but also a chronicler of the Senate, an observer now of the Senate, especially in your book, Inside the New Mexico Senate, Boots, Suits, and Citizens. So welcome back to Women's Focus.
Oh, thank you, Susan. I appreciate being here.
Let me just start out. I want to go into what your observations are, but let me just start by asking you, would you like to be back in the Senate with the new senators who are coming in, the way the new Senate may shape up?
Well, certainly I would like to be back in this Senate more than in the Senate I was in, especially at times during the late 90s and early aughts. This looks to be exciting. A lot of new women, a lot of progressives, some of the old staples gone. And so it feels like a new day. And it would be very exciting to be there now. I, in some ways, really regret that I'm not there.
What do you think women senators add, or what do you think we can expect to see with more women?
Well, you know, when I was in the Senate, after a while, it got to be the same arguments were repeated over and over again, and you knew where everyone was going to come from, where everyone was coming from. You knew that Senator John Arthur Smith would not raid, quote unquote, raid the permanent fund. You knew there were certain givens. You knew that it would be very difficult to pass certain legislation because Mary Kay Papin, the Senate pro tem, opposed legalization of marijuana, for example. And now those folks are gone. And so, you know, new solutions to problems may arise. The dam may burst on old solutions and they would be adopted. Or, you know, just having a different mix, I think, will create new opportunities.
Well, but what would be the difference with having the new people be women rather than men, do you think? Or what do you think women add?
Well, I think there'll be more listening that will go on, rather than talking. And, that's always a good thing. And I was always very frustrated with people that ask questions that they already know the answers to. And my experience has been that women are no longer afraid to ask questions that they don't know the answers to. And that sort of opens up new possibilities.
Okay, that's an interesting idea. In your book, you talk about the importance of personal relationships between the legislators and some administrators or other people,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Of knowing
lobbyists,
what those
lobbyists or
yeah
or the governor or yeah or each other.
And
those
it
are
seems
key.
It seems as though, well, I don't know whether we'll have important relationships in this with the new legislators coming in, or whether
well,
that
I
will
think that since
start.
It's a large class, since it's a large class of legislators, and many of them are women, as they were last time in the House, there will be a camaraderie amongst that group of new legislators, and those will be the relationships to watch, I think. Just as they were last time in the House when all these new women were elected from Albuquerque in particular, and they formed a critical mass, I think, that enabled, for example, background checks on firearms and some other measures as well. So I think those relationships are going to be important, as important perhaps as, you know, the relationship between, let's say the staff of the Legislative Finance Committee and the chair of the Legislative Finance Committee. That relationship, I think, was very key to what went on in the budget in the Senate in the past, for the past 10 years, really, or
yes.
more.
Yes, yes. Do you think that usually I don't expect new legislators to come in and have very much power? I mean, it takes a while to get power, but if they cooperate, maybe they will have some power.
I think that's right. And my understanding, from what I understand now in the pro tems race for the Senate this time, is that the new legislators are operating together, and they are, you know, as a group, asking the various candidates for pro tem, you know, what about this and what about that, which is, I think, a sign that they're going to try to stick together.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's interesting.
That's just scuttlebutt. I don't know. I don't know whether that's actually going to happen, but I heard some talk about that, and it wouldn't surprise me.
Yes. I don't know how much they worked together during the campaign, but I think that they were in contact with each other, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think just, you know, my own experience is that I felt that the people that came in at the same time as I did, the same year, and that was 1997, I felt a great kindred. They were kindred spirits. That we had just been through a campaign together. And so even though they maybe were ideologically separate from me, I felt like we were in the same boat. I'll give you an example of that. Representative John Heaton, who was from Carlsbad and just about my polar opposite on everything, except for health care, and I became great allies on the one thing that we could agree on, and we were both Democrats, but he was a very conservative Democrat, very pro-nuclear Democrat, and I had this whole journalistic history of, you know, opposing the website. So, but we joined forces on many bills. And then also Miguel Garcia from the South Valley of Albuquerque came to the legislature the same year I did as well. And we joined forces on many things as well and felt good spirit of cooperation in that case because we both represented valley areas.
Ah, yeah. How important do you think the number of years served in the Senate should be or serves to be in determining who gets into power and who becomes pro tem, for instance?
Formally, it doesn't, contrary to popular belief, formally it doesn't determine who is committee chair or who is pro tem or who is majority leader or whip. People defer to those who have been there for a long time, especially in times of crisis. But there, Linda Lopez, for example, and both Linda Lopez and I were made committee chairs, essentially our second term when we were there. So you don't have to be somebody that's been there for generations, you know, for you just because it's up to the pro tem to select the committee chairs with the assistance of the committee on committees.
What about seniority in terms of pro tem?
Well, I think in that case, seniority in terms of pro tem is a little bit different because in many respects, the pro tem position is a ceremonial position, or it has been a ceremonial position. And so Ben Altamirano, for example, had been there forever and became pro tem in, you know, in, I think it was after Manny left. I think he became pro tem after Manny Aragon left to become the president of Highlands University. And he was seen as a unifying figure because he had been there so long, and especially with the departure of Senator Aragon, who kind of defined an era. Ben Altamirano was also from that era, but also, and so, you know, made people comfortable about that. Now, pro tem, a leadership position. I mean, if you look at the House Speaker right now, the House Speaker has not been there forever and ever. Like, for example, Ben Lujan had before him been there forever and ever and had a certain amount of seniority and had progressed from whip to majority leader and then to speaker. In the Senate, it's very different. I mean, people become pro tem because of alliances that they have made with the Republicans. So that has happened much more frequently in the Senate than in the House, because the votes are closer in the Senate, or they have been. Now the margin has spread a little bit more. But when you have a closer number of Republicans and Democrats, there's always the opportunity for a coalition.
Oh, to cross over.
Yeah, and pro tems are often elected by, remember, pro tems are elected by the entire body, not just the Democrats. So pro tems in the past, from Tim Jennings, even Senator Aragon, Senator Richard Romero, they were elected, and Mary Kay Papin, elected by a de facto or de jure coalitions.
Well, it's interesting that you say that you look at that position as ceremonial, because that's what I have thought also. But I've talked to two women who are interested in going for that position on this show, and both of them think that they're important, powerful positions.
Well, it has become an important, powerful position. It did not start out that way. And if you look at the kind of the Constitution and the rules of the Senate, the powerhouse in the Senate is the majority leader. And the pro tem used to be very ceremonial. Now, when Senator Manny Aragon became pro tem, he made it into the most powerful position in the New Mexico Senate. And the power of the majority leader was reduced because his personality was so large that he took over many of the functions that were done by fellow members of his party. The Committee on Committees that supposedly assists the pro tem in selecting committee chairs and committee members, that's the real power of the pro tem. It's exercised in conjunction with the Committee on Committees, which the pro tem appoints. But under Senator Aragon, the Committee on Committees rarely met. And it was mainly Senator Aragon appointing those committees and committee chairs. And it was mainly the pro tem, in his case, that also assigned bills to committees. And so there was an enlargement of the power of the pro tem. And now I think the candidates for the pro tem recognize that power, and especially the power to appoint committee chairs and to committee members. You know, the pro tem, literally the name President Pro Tem means president for a period, And that meant that the ceremonial duty of the pro tem is to preside over the Senate when the lieutenant governor is not there. The lieutenant governor is the president of the Senate. The pro tem is the temporary president of the Senate when the lieutenant governor is not there.
But, of course, the pro tem is the one that has the power. The lieutenant governor really doesn't, except to in case of a tie.
That's right. That's really the only power. He has the power of the moderator to recognize people, to settle disputes among, you know, parliamentary disputes among senators.
And to keep things going smoothly, I guess.
To make rulings on whether certain motions are in order or not in order. But of course, his rulings can be overturned, and often are overturned by a majority vote.
Well, you mentioned before we started recording some of the sort of epic battles that you remember for pro tem or for power. Do you want to refer to those remind us of those a little bit?
Well, I guess the most emotional and striking one was in 2001 when Senator Manny Aragon was the nominee of the Democratic caucus to become pro tem, and on opening day, because of the fact that Senator Linda Lopez was not there. She was having her baby, and she was in UNM Hospital at that time. The calculus for how many votes needed to become pro tem changed and allowed Senator Richard Romero to coalesce with, I think it was the 18 Republicans and two other Democrats to win the election for pro tem. And after that, it was a very difficult session because it was an overt coalition with the Republicans, and the Democrats feared that Senator Romero had promised Republicans that they would become committee chairs and had made other deals, which he did not. So that was that was definitely the most striking time, the most divisive election that I remember. Now, going back in history, in the House, there were others when Representative Raymond Sanchez was overthrown by a cowboy coalition, and that coalition lasted for, I think, 4 years, maybe longer. And in fact, even before 2001, I think back in the 1980s, Senator Aragon came to power through a coalition with Republicans as well. So that's the major danger for the majority party. The majority party being the Democrats, is that if there's not absolute unity and commitment within the Democratic Party, it's always possible that their nominee could lose the pro tem position to someone who is willing to make a coalition with the Republicans and bring a few Democratic votes with him or her.
Do you think that there, in the future or in this Senate, that there might be a reaction against having such liberal senators, some very liberal senators elected, that there might be something like that, some kind of coalition form? Like that?
I don't really know. I think it's too early to tell that. I'm not privy to all the politicking that's going on right now. I'm sure there's a lot of it. But I think that I don't think so. I think that what's happening now is the Democrats are truly trying to come together to find a leader and a slate of candidates that can lead them in this time of crisis for our state. It's a real crisis, and it's a real opportunity as well. So I think this time that there's a real possibility that they could act together, because the ones who were most likely, the conservative Democrats, the ones in the middle, are always the ones that are most likely to make a coalition with the Republicans. And now a number of those folks are gone. So I think it's unlikely, but it's always possible.
Okay. What about the sort of traditions of the Senate? Some of the keepers of those traditions, like Senator John Arthur Smith and people like, and Mary Kay Papin, aren't there any longer. So do you think that some of the sort of unwritten laws and traditions will be challenged?
I'm not sure what you're thinking of in terms of unwritten laws or traditions.
Well, I'm sort of thinking about in the budget process and Senate finance and that sort of
certain sacred cows. You mean certain
yes.
sacred cows might be less sacred now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. You know, there are keepers. I think of Pete Campos as a keeper of the Senate traditions. He's been there a long time, and he knows, he's written about it too. He's written about the whole capital outlay process. He's written about, he's run an awards program for outstanding senators every session. He's a more courtly kind of, senator, which I associate more with the past than the present. So he is there, and he will certainly be upholding that. And of course, he's on the Finance Committee. And I think he is running for pro tem, and some are talking about him as the possible finance chair, if he does not win, the pro tem position.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be others too that have been there for a long time. Senator Joseph Cervantes has been in the Senate a shorter period of time than he was in the House, I think. But he knows the Senate now and knows the ways of the legislature, as well.
Well, it may be, that'll be interesting to see, personalities that arise, or not new people, but personalities that kind of come to the fore. It'll be interesting to see that happen.
Yeah, I think it would be very interesting to see that. That'll be very exciting. You know, another person who has been there a long time who is often overlooked, is Senator Nancy Rodriguez. Senator Nancy Rodriguez from Santa Fe, she came to the Senate in 1996, after the unexpected death of Senator Eddie Lopez from Santa Fe. She had been working with the county at that time, and she was immediately placed on the Senate Finance Committee because Eddie Lopez was on the Senate Finance Committee, I think. Anyway, she has been on the Senate Finance Committee ever since. I mean, that's a long
forever.
Time. That's, yeah. And so, certainly, she would be one of those, I hesitate to say old timers, but experienced, you know, experienced people, who I think would prevent things from going off the rails.
Can you remember other times when there was a big upheaval, when
a lot of new senators came in, were elected?
Yes, certainly. In 2009, the nominee of the Democratic caucus was Senator Pete Campos, and he received the support of a number of new people who came in that year, including Senator Tim Keller, Senator Eric Griego, Senator Steve Fishman. I think there were some other new people. Senator Jerry Ortiz-Pino, perhaps. Maybe he wasn't new that year. I guess he wasn't new that year. But anyway, he supported Pete. And so there we had a case of this was the Democratic nominee. However, Senator Tim Jennings made an alliance with the Republicans and peeled off about 5 votes. 2 of the votes that he peeled off were newbies, George Munoz and John Sapien, and I forget exactly who else. And then I think that John Arthur Smith, Mary Kay Papin, and Linda Lopez voted for Tim Jennings, and that was enough with the Republican support to make him pro tem instead of the Democratic nominee. So that was also pretty divisive, and that, you know, not as divisive as the other, I think, but certainly continued the precedent of a coalition.
So it seems as though there may be a lot happening after the vote, that the vote may be made, and then there may be more to come after that.
Well, we hope not, but it's always possible. Nothing is over until, we don't have a fat lady, but we have, we have the gavel coming down. Perhaps nothing is settled until the state of the state, because usually if there is not controversy, the Senate will select its officers before it adjourns or recesses to go over to hear the state of the state. Of course, it's all going to be different this year because of COVID.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. When you were in the Senate, what did you think about all these kind of machinations and going back and forth? Did it amuse you or annoy you?
No. It was very stressful. It was very stressful. And I wanted to duck and cover. And especially the Richard and Manny situation. That was extremely tense. At times, it seemed like possible violence would break out. It's quite something. So no, it was never amusing. No. It is a serious business. Who leads the New Mexico Senate?
And who did you talk to? Who did you rely on in situations like that? Did you talk to other legislators,
that was the insidious part of it, Susan. It was at that point in 2001, almost every person for themselves, because that you could not know who was on which side and what was really going on underneath the surface. So, I'm really hopeful that this is a new day. And we survived that one in the New Mexico Senate. And things if we survived that one, we could do anything.
Well, thank you for giving us that background and
Okay, well, I hope I wasn't a reference point. I hope I don't get in trouble, but I probably will. So, yeah.
This has been Dee Dee Feldman and former Senator Dee Dee Feldman, and the book that we refer to is Inside the New Mexico Senate. But there's another, you have another book that's more recent, and I can't remember the name of that.
It's called Another Way Forward, Grassroots Solutions from New Mexico. So you can get both of them from my website at ddfeldman.com. So
great.
Thanks for mentioning them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great to
yeah.
talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Susan. I appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.